answers. Vic threw the door shut, and it banged from the frame, wobbled back open a crack. She didn't even bother to close it. Never stay in a place you can't walk straight out of without a backward glance. She strode down the hall to the dining room, yanked open the narrow cupboard, ripped out the false bottom, and pulled up the bag, slung it over her shoulder. She stopped beside the table, looking at the few books stacked on the windowsill. Never own a thing you can't leave behind. She dropped the bag, knocking over a couple of pieces from the squares board, grabbed that old copy of The Life of Dab Sweet, and tossed it inside. Never make a friend you can't turn your back on. A life that leaves no marks. She paused a moment, teeth gritted. Fuck, she hissed. Tallow peered around the door, looking shocked to see her. Probably he didn't get many visitors, certainly not at night. And since the great change, who enjoyed a knock at the door they weren't expecting?
They caught Orso, she said, pushing past him.
What?
He was hiding in the Glockter's old house of all places, with bloody black wicker.
She went to the lamp and blew it out, sinking the room into darkness.
She gave him up.
Tallow looked sadly into a corner.
Guess you can't trust anyone.
The Lord Regent has him. She sidled to the window and peered down into the darkened streets.
Somewhere in the city.
What's that got to do with us?
It won't be long until they find out I helped him escape.
Tallow stared.
You helped him? What? I thought we were supposed to stand with the winners.
I'm in danger, Tallow, and that means all my friends are in danger. Luckily, I don't have any friends.
I'm probably the closest thing.
Exactly. She flicked the shabby curtains closed.
Which is why you have to come with me.
A what? Where?
Still working out the details. The main thing is not here. Believe me, I'm less than delighted about it myself.
What about my sister? Vic winced, the question she'd always known was coming.
I can't leave her, he said, voice getting higher and higher, more and more panicked. I mean, she won't get by on her own. I can't go without her.
Fine, snapped Vic. We'll get her next. But we travel light. You understand?
Be gentle, muttered Tallow, stepping up to the door. She scares easily.
He knocked, three slow, steady knocks.
It's me,
he hissed at the lock. Nothing. He knocked again, three slow, steady knocks.
It's me. Let's go, hissed Vic.
This broke all her rules, and she had a bad feeling. She'd had a bad feeling for years. Tallow slipped out a key, unlocked the door with a trembling hand, turned the knob, and pushed it creaking open. There was a musty-smelling little hall beyond, paper peeling from the mould-speckled plaster.
Inquisitor Teufel's with me,
he said softly, like he was trying to coax a skittish cat down from a windowsill. He stepped into a room where dim light flickered and Vic followed.
You remember Inquisitor Teufel, don't you?
Of course, said Pike. He was standing in the centre of the floor with his hands clasped behind him, as if he'd been expecting her for hours. Vic hadn't often been taken by total surprise, but this was the second time he'd managed it. She spun around, but there were practicals in the hallway, four of them, black-dressed and black-masked, the way they used to be before the great change.
I get the feeling you might have been expecting someone else, said Pike.
I can only apologize for that. Please don't blame Master Tallow. He was only doing his job. Extremely well, I might add. Vic stared at Tallow. Somehow he didn't look so much like her brother anymore. His eyes weren't sad, they were hard and careful, the way she might have looked at a prisoner before she started asking questions.
Sorry,
he said, but he didn't look sorry at all. Pike watched, his burned face as usual showing no emotion. She wondered, as usual, whether behind the ruined nerves, the ruined muscles, the ruined skin, he was bursting with feeling,
or if he really was a void inside. "The Weaver would like a word," he said. Vic swallowed.
"Aren't you the Weaver?"
The corner of Pike's mouth quivered. "A title I borrowed from a better man." He gave a nod. She was seized from behind, and a bag was forced over her head. She didn't know where they were taking her. She didn't know who was behind this. She hardly knew what the sides were anymore, let alone which one she was supposed to be on. She didn't even know what betrayal, what deception, what secret she was paying for. Probably she'd never know. Body found floating by the docks, an unsatisfactory ending to her bitter little story. Occasionally, one of the practicals would murmur, "Steps up here," or "Mind your shoulder," in a polite, disinterested tone, often with a steering tug or a gentle nudge, but never rough, no violence whatsoever. That, no doubt, would come later. It took a while to get wherever they were going. Lots of time to think, to feel her stiff hip aching, to listen to her quick breath echoing, to mull over all the deceptions, all the betrayals, the ones she'd done and the ones done to her. By the time they stopped, she'd steeled herself. By the time they pulled off the bag, she was ready for anything. Except the one thing she got. Her own front door. One of the practicals carefully flattened the bag, folded it with fussy precision, then slipped it into a pocket, while the other untied her hands. They stood there in front of her little apartment. Fitting, in a way. All that pain and worry just to get back to where she'd started. They didn't force her in, but they weren't giving her any other choices. One pointed out the door, like an usher showing a valued client to her seat in the theatre. "Just inside, Inquisitor, if you'd be so kind." She could have fought, she supposed, but she'd have lost. She could have run, but they'd have caught her. She could have screamed for help, but no help would come. And anyway, now the moment had arrived, she wanted answers. It might be she'd only get more questions. It might be she'd get a final crushing blow to the back of the skull and darkness. But she wanted answers. She pushed the door open with a fingertip. Her face was sweaty from the inside of the bag, the air cool on her skin. A lamp was lit in the dining room. An accusing finger of light stretched out across the boards towards her. She followed it down the hall, her knees a little weak, her mouth a little dry, her heart beating hard. Vic's guest sat at the dining table in the light of a single lamp. Brightness splashed across the sharp bones of his face, darkness gathered in the deep lines. The squares board was set before him. The pieces Vic had knocked over returned to their places, casting long shadows across the checkered wood.
"Inquisitor Teufel, I have been waiting for you."
Now it all made sense. And like every illusion, once Vic knew how it worked, she couldn't understand how she hadn't seen it right away.
"You're the Weaver," she said.
San Dan Glockter bared his ruined teeth as he sat back in his wheeled chair and considered her calmly.
"Yes.
Not Pike, not Rizanow, you."
"Me."
"You made the breakers."
"Made? No.
Glockter let one thin finger trail across the pieces on the squares board, as though considering his next move.
"Society is a competition, and one cannot have winners without creating losers. People who lose once tend to lose more, and people who lose too often become discontented. I merely gathered them into a group, gave them a name, pointed them in the right direction."
"You were the architect of the great change?"
"Architect sounds so grand. There was dry straw everywhere. I simply struck the match."
She thought of the bank in flames in Valbec, the ash fluttering down.
She thought of the fires leaving their black scars through Adua. She thought of the court of the people, burning up like a great torch to leave a blasted shell. Why? Ah, why do I do this? Why?
Glockta gazed down at the squares board.
Because sometimes, to change the world, we must burn it down. Baez controlled everything. We were all pieces in his game.
He nudged one of the smallest pieces forwards into empty space.
He owned the banks, and the banks owned the merchants, owned the nobles, owned the treasury, even. The king himself danced to Baez's music. The closed council, too. Even me, though I'm not much of a dancer these days. The great change was the only way I could see to cut all the puppet strings at once. The only way I could see to make us...
Glockta shrugged his bony shoulders, wincing as though even that much movement gave him pain.
Free. Free?
Vic stared at him.
Is that what we are now? Within reason. People love the idea of freedom, but in my experience, there is only so much they can be trusted with. You saw what Judge did with it. Take it far enough, freedom becomes chaos. The voice of the people is just noise. It is the blather of the lunatics in the madhouse. It is the squeal of the pigs in the slaughterhouse. It is a choir of morons. Most of them don't even know what they want, let alone how to get it. They need someone to tell them what to do.
Someone like you, I suppose.
Or you.
He waved towards the bench on the other side of the table.
Have a seat, Inquisitor. Towering over me like that, you're making me nervous.
She dropped down opposite him, numb. If the Breakers were your tool, why send me to watch them?
I needed to know what they were about. You may have noticed that people have a habit of doing stupid, unpredictable things. And I could hardly show up to meetings.
He gently turned the squares board around, considering the position from the other side.
The Breakers would have been most upset, I imagine, to find they were taking orders from the man they considered their worst enemy.
Taking orders? A moment ago you were merely pointing them in the right direction. Lamplight glistened on his empty gums as he grinned.
You always were a sharp interrogator. Sometimes I had to give a little more than guidance, I confess. Otherwise, they might all have run off their own way, like woodlice from a lifted log.
Is that what happened in Valbec?
People are not machines that one can move with a lever. This business is more art than science.
Glockta licked unhappily at one of the teeth he still had.
I had planned a dress rehearsal, you might say, but Rithenau shit the bed on the timing, just as he shit the bed on everything. I am an inveterate bedshitter myself, so I recognize the tendency in others. Sadly, as an old colleague of mine was fond of saying, we must work with the tools we have.
What about Tallow? Is that even his name?
Do you know, I forget his original name. I'd be surprised if even he remembers it.
Glockta let his forefinger rest on top of one of the smallest pieces, as though considering a move.
I needed to know what you were about. You may have noticed that people have a habit of doing stupid, unpredictable things. I placed him with the Breakers so you could take him under your wing, and he could make sure you stuck to the script, which you did, admirably.
He was your plant from the beginning, she whispered.
Don't be upset at him, Vic, it's beneath you. I found him in the camps, like you. I offered him the same deal, and he made the same choice. The only choice. To stand with the winners.
So she'd finally found a better liar than herself. Or perhaps she'd just found one she wanted desperately to believe. Strange that the deaths of thousands left her cold, while the betrayal of one boy made her furious.
How did you know that I... How could you know?
Don't be too hard on yourself. We all have sore spots. He grimaced as he shifted in his chair.
I myself am one enormous one, and finding other people's has been my business for a very long time.
He nudged another piece forwards across the board.
I know you like to think there are no chinks in your armour, but really, you're not too deep a mystery to fathom. To me, your guilt has always been plain as a sign around your neck. About the breakers in Valbeck, about Colm Sibbald and his friends, about the rebels in Starrickland, about your mother and father, about your sisters and your brother.
That was all you, she snarled in his face. You made me do all that, Sibbald and the breakers and the rebels and all the rest.
She stabbed at her chest with a finger, and her voice warbled, cracked.
Why should I be guilty? What fucking choice did I have?
It had already become a plaintive whine. Fate's helped her, almost a tearful one.
You're the one. You're the one sent my family to the camps in the first place.
I am aware, said Glockter calmly.
He hadn't even flinched.
Where they died? And you survived. I told you to forgive yourself, remember? Your family simply weren't tough enough. You are.
Vic blinked down at the squares board, the anger already drained away to leave her hollow and helpless. Rizenau, Judge, Orso, Leo Danbrock, they were all small pieces in the game Glockter had been playing. So small, they never even guessed how vast the board truly was. Which made her what? A speck of dust between the squares at best.
Where were you rushing off to anyway? Asked Glockter. Tallinn's? To work for Shiloh Vitari? Please, the woman's a hack. We both know how badly you want a cause worthy of your loyalty.
He winced as he twisted to reach into a pocket.
Archlector? Commissioner? It doesn't matter what you call it. I believe the time has come for you to go from digging out the answers to posing the questions. To go from being one of the pieces.
And he leaned forwards to place something on the squares board. That ring with the purple stone he used to wear. That Pike had worn after him.
To making the moves. Practical Dole.
One of the practicals lumbered in, winced, as he manoeuvred Glockter's chair from behind the table. It caught one of the legs on the way and sent a few squares pieces clicking over to roll around in helpless circles on their sides.
Feel free to refuse. I will understand.
Vic's old master leaned to murmur as he was wheeled past.
But we both know that ring will fit you perfectly.
She heard the door shut and was left alone in a heavy silence. Just her and all the lies. Some she'd told, some she'd been told, some she'd told herself, until she'd no idea what was true anymore. Until she'd no idea if there was such a thing. Vic picked up the ring, turning it around in her fingers. Who could have dreamed she'd one day wear it? The great stone shone in the lamplight, full of purple sparks. From the prison camps of Angland to the pinnacle of power.
Then she caught sight of something in her bag, the worn gilt on the spine of The Life of Dab Sweet. She pulled it out, and it fell open on the table at that favourite page, that favourite picture. The Great Plains, grass going on forever. A place where you can make yourself anew, where you can go as far as your dreams can take you. Rubbish, most likely. A made-up drawing in a book full of lies. But there comes a time you have to say no to what you're given and reach for what you want. The truth was, Vic had always wanted to be loyal, but not to nations or ideas or causes, to people. Orso was gone. Sybalt was dead. Tallow had never even existed. If she'd ever had a debt to Glockter, it had only been in her own mind, one she chose to keep because she had nothing else. So she pronounced it long since paid. She tossed the ring spinning across the squares board, threw the bag over her shoulder, and walked out without a backward glance. She flung the door shut, and it banged from the frame, wobbled back open a crack. She didn't even bother to close it. She thought of a wide sky over a far country. She smiled as she strode off into the night.